I am really excited to be here to talk about the Public Health Nerd campaign. There's a hashtag campaign. We put the pound sign in front of it. I work in the digital media branch at CDC, and that's within the Division of Public Affairs. And I work across teams, so focusing on digital integration. I work with the technology team, the innovations team, and the social media team. I do have a little bit of experience doing social media in the federal government. I did a Twitter chat for National Public Health Week years ago, Safety is No Accident. And I actually did the first Twitter chat that CDC ever did on concussions in sports. So this, too, is pushing the boundaries of social media. And if you do any work with the federal government, you'll realize that this was something maybe some of the leadership felt a little bit uncomfortable about in the beginning. We all love it now. I have nothing to disclose, no relationships to disclose, other than I've met Daniel here after 4 years of working with him for the first time today. So we started, I came into the Office of the Associate Director for Communications about 2 years ago. And one of the things that I was asked to do was create content at the OD, the Director's Office of Communication level. I was used to having a lot of content to work with. Prior to joining the communications team in the Director's Office, I was with the TIPS campaign, TIPS for Former Smokers. So if you know anything about that campaign, you understand that we had a lot of really great stories to tell, very powerful, very moving stories to tell. But working in the director's office is a little different. The topics don't live there. We promote the work on agency profiles. We disseminate the graphics and social media. And we manage the web and create the technology platforms, but we don't own the topics. So the Public Health Nerd campaign is something that that we doing enterprise communications can do. And you working in public health, you probably realize that there's a lot of education to do just about public health in general. What is the difference between public health versus health care? I think that is... You know, so we wanted to talk about what is public health, what are some of the public health interventions and wins that have impacted your life and the quality of your life, because this is not something that's widely known, I believe, just reading some comments on social media. These were the first two graphics that we published with the Public Health Nerd campaign. These are just instances from my life. And I'm sure there are probably things that you've experienced in your own life. You know, having a very inappropriate conversation over dinner about something to do with public health. I think it's just normal for us to work in public health. And then there was a screening of the Contagion movie for CDC staff. And I remember sitting there thinking, God, there's only one epidemiologist deployed to this major outbreak. And someone pointed out that I actually had my hero cape on today, which was not planned, but you know, we started out, and I really had to make a strong case to leadership that lightweight content is an important tool for effective social media communication. We deal with serious issues in public health, but we're human beings. We have all different aspects of our personalities, and humor is a part of that. That light way for us to connect, I think, is really important. So you look at the metrics here, and you can see that it was very popular. So that gained the trust from leadership that we needed to continue the campaign. And we asked people to embrace their inner nerd, to pin their passion for public health. We had a graphic that was the big smiley face with the nerd glasses that said, "I am a public health nerd because." And these are just some of the responses that we had on Twitter and Facebook. The lady that actually put the nerd graphic as her profile image is an old boss of mine who is really a public health hero. She was just deployed to Sierra Leone for a couple months, and she's just come back. So individuals embrace the public health nerd. Companies, organizations, and public health embrace the nerd like APHA. I think I think the nerd graphics have been more popular on HHA's profiles with their audiences. Maybe some of them.
We got a lot of students.
Yeah, so it's really been super cool. And this is just some of the feedback that we have. So I wanted to say a little bit before I talk about what we did with APHA, National Public Health Week, about, you know, what the difference is with doing social media, creating like a one-off graphic, and creating a brand. Working with the TIPS campaign, and I've created other brands, this wasn't a one-off. And you can see that all of our graphics have an element of visual storytelling. You can look at this one graphic, I will man up to my checkup, which some people didn't love, you know, the man up term. It was popular, but we got some not so nice comments. But it's, all of them tell a story. We always have the consistent look and feel with these graphics, the black bar. All of the graphics are actionable. With social media, it's such a great tool to include a call to action. Whether it's go and get your checkup during Men's Health Month, whether it's like or share or whatever it is, finish this sentence, you know, answer this quiz. And then, of course, the lovely, on the left-hand side, all of our graphics have the design element, which, you know, this is a nerd, you know, you see that this is a nerd graphic. And we call it a design element because it's very difficult to get a logo cleared at CDC to actually, you know, get approval to create a logo. So this is just our design element. National Public Health Week was a great opportunity for the nerd. As I said, our graphics and our campaign was super popular with APHA's fans and followers, and Daniel reached out and we talked about, you know, what we could do to highlight the daily themes. And unlike Long Beach, we shamelessly promote National Public Health Weekend, our graphics, which, you know, I've been in the federal government for 5 years, so I come from private, you know, and to be honest with you, I've always wondered why we do anything that we don't, you know where our audience is, that we don't promote, that we don't, I mean, I'm pretty shameless about it, so I guess I owe that to you know, not being of that long in the public sector. So we created 6 public health nerd graphics, National Public Health Week graphics, 1 Facebook cover photo, which we left there across the Facebook page the whole week, and 1 button that was on a web page that people could embed on their websites. The cover photo got 465 likes, 165 shares, 5 comments. This is just some of the metrics. The reach, and the interesting thing about the reach here is that we took out all of the conversation that was related to National Public Health Week chat for or National Public Health Week 14, all of the hashtag conversation that was included in the hashtags that were National Public Health Week hashtags, we took out. This is only public health nerd conversation here. So it was a super successful, effort across that week. Here are some of the results of the 7 public health nerd National Public Health Week Facebook posts, reach, likes, shares. And one thing I will say is, like, I went back yesterday and just took a look at the album online, and these things, this is just like, they just keep giving. They keep, you know, they're still getting pickup. I think, far more shares than when I pulled this after National Public Health Week. So all these metrics represent really that time period that was here. So 3:30 through 4:13. You see now the retweets and the favorites from Twitter. And we did publish the graphics across our profiles on Google, Instagram, and Pinterest. And the interesting thing is when we first started doing the nerd, we didn't have the campaign on Pinterest, but people were pinning it, so we thought, oh, well, you know, we need to join up and put them on Pinterest. And we do have a profile, so we did that. You see that. And one of the things I want to mention is National Public Health Week is a really great opportunity to define what's important about a theme to your audience. And when we talked about highlighting the themes, one of the only things that I said is, you know, we will have to focus on CDC's key messages. What's most important within these themes to CDC and the people, you know, that we represent, our stakeholders. And which was great, and it really, really worked for us. You see that, you know, some of you may be familiar with the Million Hearts campaign. This is messaging from the Million Hearts campaign. So team up to make blood pressure control your goal. All of the graphics represent the key messages for CDC. And we had a broader digital strategy. I will say this, I believe this, social media doesn't exist on its own. It really does need, a backbone, which is, you know, web, or whatever your digital strategy is. But we did, published a page, and every day we would add a new graphic, themed graphic. So that graphic would link back to CDC's resources and, web information, web content on that topic. And it was a great opportunity, too, for APHA to syndicate that page. You see that we had 4,902 page views via syndication. So we had more page views not on CDC.gov for that page than people that were seeing it directly. And that was really because of APHA's efforts. I mean, they were taking the graphics from their web page and sharing them out on their social media. They weren't sharing from our social media profile. And that was the third highest syndicated page for CDC for the month of April. So, syndication is something that I work on, but there's a colleague here of mine. And it really is part of digital integration. If you're not familiar with the opportunities of syndicating CDC's content, we have a syndication site. All of our graphics will be on there. Our social media optimized content is there. So you can, repurpose and use a lot of the images and social media content that's there for your campaign. If you're not familiar with it, it's a good resource. We did Be Healthy from the Start graphic, and we really wanted to emphasize through a quiz the benefits of breastfeeding. We also created a National Public Health Week digital press kit, CDC did, for our partners. We did a lot of internal promotion at CDC through CDC Connects, which is our intranet site. And we really wanted to focus on what is National Public Health Week, how can I get involved with our internal CDC colleagues. Every day, they did a story on National Public Health Week, and also there was a quote from Dr. Benjamin about being a public health nerd himself, which was adorable. And I haven't been able to get Dr. Frieden to, declare that he's a public health nerd, so I think that was a huge win on your part. So we did a lot of internal promotion at CDC, too. And we participated in the National Public Health Week Twitter chat. We were really pleased that to help contribute to it being the second trending national topic nationally. And I will say, that I don't think Daniel pointed this out, that the number one trending hashtag was a promoted hashtag. So the reach that we had was organic. I mean, we didn't pay for it. So, congratulations if you were a part of the Twitter chat. And Dr. Frieden ranked second most influential profile in the chat in terms of mentions. So that means more people retweeted and mentioned the things that he was tweeting about during the chat. Those are some other people that were. And I just want to take a second to mention why I think the nerd works. I mean, beyond that it's, it has the humor factor, and I think all of us want a way to be an ambassador for what we do, to evangelize what we do, and you can take this hashtag and you can put, your story, your passion, behind it. This right here is one of our recent graphics. It was to promote vital signs. And we had a surge in subscribers after doing this, I think greater than we ever had in a month. So I probably don't agree with Melanie that this is a bow down, the best marketing campaign she's seen in a long time. But thank you, Melanie, if you're here or around. But these are the reasons that I think, you know, it works. We really stick to what we do. We're true to the science, actionable and engaging, visually appealing, timely and relevant. All those hashtags are really important in that. We use plain language. We tell a story, and it's optimized for social sharing. And then some of them, obviously, we're targeting public health nurses, but some of them are targeted in terms of messaging and channel selection. So that is my presentation today. Thank you.
One thing I found interesting is that Sandy said, I don't know about asking people to like our page. And Amy is like, we shamelessly promote our stuff. And I think at APHA we kind of do the same. And I think what's interesting that both of you alluded to is that it's constantly changing. Once upon a time, it was just Facebook. I want to say 10 years ago, or maybe even less than that. But obviously it's grown to Twitter and Pinterest and Instagram and YouTube. We're starting to get on Google Plus. I don't know if any of you use Google Plus, but there's a really neat interactive video capability that it has. So maybe we'll be working with CDC and Long Beach HHS in the future. I'm going to open this up to questions. I have a couple of my own that I want to ask our panelists. So, for both of you, since you got started in public health, how much has social media changed your roles? Sandy, I know you were talking to me about how, you know, your emergency preparedness and social media was just kind of something that, you know, you took on. I know at APHA, it's kind of the same for me, and Amy also, you didn't start in social media. But how has it changed the responsibilities that you have and just your daily lives?
So when I started doing social media for CDC, I was working in the injury center at the director's office level. We really started out social media just blogging, which is kind of a safe way to get started. But my boss at the time asked me to dedicate 15% of my time to social media. And really, this was just at the start for CDC in terms of using social media and exploring. And it just blew up. I mean, 15%, I mean, no, I was really, like 110% of my time was, after we got started with social media. But for me, it really has been a game changer for the federal government, because I'm a storyteller. I come from a traditional media background, advertising. I've been doing storytelling for a long time. And I love the fact that we can communicate directly to the public. Like, a lot, traditionally, CDC has communicated a lot through partners. And this is, I mean, it's a game changer in a huge way, because there's a lot of risk with that as well. So, you know, we've had to put a lot of guidance, a lot of thought behind, you know, what we do on social media and why, and clearance. And so it has been a game changer in many ways for the federal government. But overall, very positive.
So for me, I actually, my first time using social media at work was several years ago on this thing called MySpace. I don't know if you guys remember that. I actually have only been working in emergency management for about 3.5 years. Prior to that, I worked in teen pregnancy prevention and HIV AIDS education. And I worked with youth, teenagers. And so they were coming in, and I don't remember exactly what year it was. It was like around 2005, 2006 maybe, and they were all about MySpace. And at the time in California, the funding every year kept getting reduced, and we did a lot of outreach, and we used to spend a lot of money on material development and to promote any activities. We, you know, have to run spend money on printing, and all of a sudden it became apparent that we didn't have to do that anymore, because the kids were taking flyers, but they were online, they were on MySpace. And so we started using MySpace to promote our activity. We had like question and answer sessions on there, so if youth had a question, they could connect with us that way. And that was really my first experiences with it, and it was awesome. It was truly awesome. And it was so cool, and it made us seem really cool that we had our own MySpace page. So, you know, the youth were like, oh, you guys are cool. We like you, you know. So it gave us some street cred. So that was with MySpace. Now with emergency management, it's a huge part of it. It's not the only resource we use because obviously we know that not everyone is connected. So as I mentioned in my presentation, it's a tool, but it's growing. It's growing all the time. And we recognize that we have to stay at the forefront of it because more and more folks are relying on it to get their information. They're not going to our city webpage to get information necessarily, but they will follow us and expect to get a tweet or a, you know, see some post if something is happening in the city. And in fact, there was recently an incident that happened involving our airport. I don't know if you guys heard about this on the media, but it really didn't involve the health department per se, but it was a good example locally of the fact that there was an incident with an airplane, emergency landing. We have also in Long Beach, we have everything in Long Beach. We have a port, we have an airport. So this emergency landing occurs and just happened to be an actor from this little movie called Twilight on the airplane. Jackson Rathbone didn't play Edward or Jacob, but one of the lesser known characters. Anyways, he immediately is tweeting out everything that's going on, you know, the hit that he experienced, and gets picked up by TMZ, gets picked up by all the media outlets, and he basically controls the story. His tweets basically controls. And by the time the official press release came out, it was like, okay, that's so 2 hours ago, forget about it. So really, with emergency management and the work that I do now, it's very apparent that we have to be right there tweeting, even if it's just, you know, with, depending on what information we're able to share, but, you know, just letting people know more information to follow, but at least we've got them hooked and they'll come back to us to get the message.
The one thing that also I think has changed over time is when, like for MySpace, for instance, social media was very much about the younger generation and the much younger generation, people that were had not even gone to college, had not gotten their public health education. I can't speak for both of you, but at APHA, that's changed tremendously. We have seniors that are very involved in social media. Obviously, our students and everything in between. Amy and Sandy, if you could share your experiences, have you seen that at your agencies? Have you seen that that social media really represents all ages? And how about for the people in attendance here, if you could give your recommendations on, no matter what age you are, how to use social media? Heavy, huh?
That's a lot. The main... we have a very educated audience of the people that fan and follow our profiles are public health professionals, mainly. The biggest group, they're quite educated. I mean, we've surveyed, we know. But that's just the people that we're, you know, are already following our pages. We do a lot of social media that's targeted, like Sandy was saying, towards teens, towards a group like smokers. When I was working, I led the digital creative and strategy for the TIPS campaign. Unlike the Public Health Nerd, where there is absolutely $0 behind this campaign, you know, we had the money to go put paid weight behind, you know, behind digital media content and bring in and target smokers. And so, you know, it's social media and digital media is very powerful in that way, especially if you have just even a tiny bit. I mean, I don't know if you guys do any boosting or whatever on your profiles, but it doesn't take a lot of money to target exactly the audience that you're looking to draw to this message or to, you know. And another way that I look at it too, as well, is, 33% of conversation online is about health, some aspect of health. And we really need to be out there in the conversation because there's a lot of misinformation. And they're not coming to your website. So if you're in the conversation, you can bring them to the credible content, resources, messages that we do have. So, but if you're not out there at all, you can't expect that they're just, oh, we created it and they're going to find it. It's just, that's just a fantasy. So you have to be, you know, involved in the conversation when and where people are talking about these issues. I've been working on full time on the Ebola response for 2 months, and that has been, what kind of situation that was with social media. So,
well, we actually haven't done too much in terms of breaking down our current audience on social media, but just based on the posts and the follow we have our Facebook page and Instagram, I say we actually probably have a little bit older audience than we did when we had our MySpace. And I know that's kind of like the keep hearing the media, Facebook's problem is, you know, the youth are leaving it. And I know, certainly for me, I kind of lost my love affair with Facebook ended when I got a friend request from my mother-in-law.
So that's why, as I mentioned before, it's really important to not just be on Facebook and solely use that, but really go out everywhere and try to stay on top of where everyone is in order to capture the entire audience.
All right. Want to open this up to questions. I know that many of you are on social media and probably are looking for best practices and on how to use it for yourself or your organization. So I think I saw a couple of hands go up.
I think
yeah.
How about this one?
No. Hey, I'm all in trouble.
And since we are a safety net provider, our audiences, you know, have basic literacy levels that are reasonable. And language is also an issue. We're very multilingual, very diverse. So we're trying to get into social media. We're not there yet. And one of the tests that I've been given is how do we get this started and how do we do it well based on how other people have done it. So this is very informative. Thank you. What would you suggest, maybe a couple of things that we should definitely start with, considering the language complexity and also the literacy
complexity? Great, start with radio. Do you have a majority in terms of, like, what's your majority population in terms of language?
English, Spanish, and Cantonese.
Okay. And are they English speaking? One of the things that I started out early on saying is you don't have to have your own profile to participate in social media. You can see the conversation on other people's profiles. And, I mean, you can do that just through writing a blog and then going out and linking your blog around where the conversation is happening. And you can do that in the language that, you know, where the conversation is happening, if it's in a different language. I believe that you can be active on social media even if you don't have your own profile. And I said earlier, the safe way to start in social media for us 5 years ago was blogging. And the reason I say that is because you can control comments. You know, you approve the comment on WordPress, and you know, you by the time you've approved it, you already have a cleared response. Facebook, Twitter, you're not controlling the pace. In that sense. So that's a blogging is a safe way to start. Guest blogging, you don't have to have your own blog. I mean, if you have a voice, you have something important to say, people are looking for content everywhere in social media. And there's no such thing as, you know, free social media. This is time and resource intensive. So don't, you know, be under that sort of illusion.
answer her.
I'm sorry?
May I try to help answer her?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
By the way, I'm at Big Dad 123 if you're following us. I'm saying this too. So what we did, I'm the health officer, Child Training Department of Health, which is in Maryland, and we have a lot of people who speak Spanish and different Spanish. So one of the things we do on our Facebook and that I try to do on my Twitter is to make sure that I use infographics and things that tell the picture, even if you can't read all the words, and also putting pictures sort of drives people to your site. We do translate a lot of our stuff into Spanish because that's our most predominant language and things that are really important. You'll see it as a post in both. And then I go out and share shamelessly from other places also. It makes you less stale because somebody else has paid somebody to get a video and it's on YouTube and they want other people to see it. So you're helping them while you're helping yourself.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And to add on, I think it's important if you have a target audience, no matter where you work, if you have a target audience that you're not reaching, so if you have a predominantly Spanish-speaking audience and you don't have pages that have information in Spanish, then you're not doing your job. I think as that's an organizational type thing, and hopefully that there's staff there that also speaks Spanish or Cantonese, and can put out some of whatever social media channels you wish to use. Make sure that you have them in all three languages. I know at APHA we have a campaign called Get Ready, which is all, it's for emergency preparedness. Anything from natural disasters to infectious disease. And we noticed this problem a couple years ago, that we have all this great information, but it was all in English. And what we decided to do was create fact sheets in both English and Spanish. The response was good. I mean, because we do have so many Spanish-speaking members, we actually used one of our staff members to translate all of the English fact sheets into Spanish, and we promoted both of them just as frequently. So I think if you know you have a large target audience that doesn't necessarily speak English, even if most of your staff does, I think that it's just critical that that you use every language and that you're not excluding anyone that might be in your audience. All right, I think I saw some other questions. Actually, I think in the back.
Hi. My, I actually don't have a question, I just have a comment to make, because I actually used to work for the city of Long Beach, for the Bureau of Environmental Health, and it came a long way. Nice to see. During the time I worked there, 2010 to 2011-ish, the only thing they were doing for public health week was walking up the hill, and the potluck was not pressured. So it's nice to see that there's a lot being done. Also, to give credit to Long Beach, because there are different languages that we speak, one of the things that we do is partner with other organizations, and we translate communications with the Khmer, Tagalog, and English and Spanish. And we have a workforce that is diverse so that persons that can translate the information. Another thing, because I work for UCLA now, and I partner with the California State Health Department. So if you're at a local health department, what we're going to do is partner with the state because they already offer a lot of communication in those languages. So whatever topic area you're interested in, they most likely already have those materials, and all you need to do is rebrand them.
Yeah, we actually do have a very diverse workforce, and we're able to translate pretty much just with using our own Kamai is spoken a lot in Long Beach, and so we're really fortunate to have so much diversity.
Yeah. All right. I believe I
just to expand on that, what are the two languages that the East Coast guy and other people
are? Kamai and Tagalog, which is Cambodian community, and Long Beach has.
I'm Anya Bierman. I'm from Toronto Public Health, and I have a question for Sandy. You were training your staff on the use of social media. Were you training them on their personal devices or on work devices?
So prior to the Public Health Week, we actually had a session that Diane Brown is here. She held. It was a PowerPoint kind of explaining how to use it, how we use it, what types of things we are put on there, and we've been working on creating some guidelines, what to be posted and all of that, working with our city management, because, you know, obviously we're city managers, you know, we have to be careful, but so there's a lot of work being done, and we're still like really in the beginning stages of really pushing this forward and expanding on it. But in terms of for public health, it was on the personal devices. There are some staff who are issued city devices, but that's just a few at the health department. The majority are using their personal devices.
Yeah, because I'm just curious, because as city employees, if they're are they representing your department? Because aren't there some concerns about representation and opinion? Because we have that concern as well. In our department, we have 1,800 employees just in our public health department. And we filter all of our social media through one person. So it makes it very, very challenging. You know, we all feed the information through this person, but he is the only one person who can execute our social media plan, because there are concerns about the credibility of our social media campaign.
So with us, we don't give access to all the employees to be able to post on our Facebook page. There are a limited number of staff who really just a handful who have access to post things and are basically the administrators, and that's true of all the different platforms. So we don't just allow people to go on there and post whatever they want. Now, they can obviously go on and post comments, yeah, and that type of thing. And we did have, really recently, an incident where someone who was an employee posted a comment that was not something we felt was very represented our message. And so that person was, you know, it was addressed to that person. The post was deleted. And so that is, you know, that is obviously an issue with social media, and we have to be careful. But just to let you know, the way we are on Facebook, it's, we're not like a friend, so we don't go connect to their personal pages.
Right.
We don't want to know what people are doing on their personal pages, really. So you just follow us, you like us, but we're not connected in that way.
Can I just add to that? I work with Sandy. We kind of had the two goals. One was to really get people comfortable with our social media pages, and we wanted programs to post more content on our site. Although, as Sandy said, it has to be filtered through key people who've been trained and know how to post. But we were trying to get more content from all the different programs, as Sandy said, we do with. We're in emergency preparedness, so we're always scrambling to try to get content. So this is a way to say, hey, we have these pages available or these tools, you know, give us your content. And then as far as people using their personal accounts, we kind of, as Katie mentioned, we want a lot of followers, and we've seen when things have trended, oftentimes it's from one of our staff liking something, and then all of their followers see it, and so we're just trying to get momentum from them accessing our
channel. And I'll piggyback that. Don't be afraid to use your partners, you know, whether they're individuals or organizations that you work closely with. to share some of your messaging. We do that all the time at ABHA. We've done that with CDC, and CDC's done that with us. So obviously, you don't want to always do the asking. Sometimes you need to also do the sharing. But I think, especially when you have important messages to send out, it's critical because social media is by definition infectious. It trends. That's how you reach as many people as possible. So if you have something important to promote, make sure that all of your that you use all of your resources that you have in the toolbox.
My name is Amy Lee. I'm Program Director for the Consortium of Eastern Ohio Mass for Public Health Program, a consortium of five universities. So we try to keep our students connected. We started using Facebook and LinkedIn for professionalism. We started using Twitter. My program assistant knows about Pinterest. I kind of got a two questions. One is, are there some kind of guidelines as to the best kind of social media to use, depending on the demographic you're trying to reach or the purpose you're trying to reach? And the second question is, a lot of the times when we're looking at the evaluation of whether something's been effective, they see, you know, how many followers or whatever, is there anything out there that tells you the effectiveness that it's actually changed behaviors? And finally, thank you so much for telling us about the public health nerd. I just Twittered a picture of the session. I hope you don't mind. at the OMPH program followers.
CDC has guidelines, social media toolkit online. If you go to cdc.gov, I think it's /social media. Where we have guidance for channels. So if you're looking at a younger audience, you may want to look at something like Tumblr. And we talk about why to use different social media channels. And it's really important that all of the different social media channels, they have different functionality. It's important to familiarize yourself with the functionality so that you're using it effectively and understanding how other people are using it, because that's what's going to make your content reach the most number of people. So a lot of times, and what I've seen early on at CDC is that, you know, we create content, we clear content, and we publish the same thing on every single profile. That is not an effective use of social media. Every single platform has a different, you know, different functionality, different use, different audiences. So really familiarize yourself with what it is that you're going to get into, and is that going to reach the audience that you want to reach? And we have guidance that addresses exactly those questions and issues on CDC.
Is there any evaluation out there that
Yes. So, I mean, I was involved in two campaigns, national campaigns, and with free stuff, you know, you're limited sometimes. I mean, we have tools, paid for tools that we can do evaluations, you know, with. In terms of behavior change, if you look at the TIPS campaign, we evaluated behavior change, and we looked at how people, you know, how we reach people through digital media. We added tags onto our URLs. So we knew if somebody came to our site, which piece of creative they came from, which site they came from, how long they stayed on our site, what the route they took through our site, when they clicked on the I'm ready to quit button. And we also knew if somebody saw a piece of creative online, and we targeted smokers 18 to 54. If they saw a piece of creative and they didn't go to it right away, but then went back to the site, we knew that too. So digital is so high tech now. It is so highly targetable. It's really an excellent tool. So we did evaluate behavior change. There are papers on it.
Oh.
And yeah, so, and I've also been involved in a Twitter study for our leadership profile for Dr. Friedman, which we used our own tools to look at, you know, who follows Dr. Friedman, what they do with his original content, and we learned a lot about what we were doing well and what we needed to do differently to further his profile. So there are, we use Sysomos, but there are free tools too that you can use for evaluation, and a lot of that stuff is published too. So I can get with you if you want to email me. I can send you some examples of it.
We should want both.
Well, just my email address, really. That's a box. So if you want a response quickly, you can email me directly.
Yeah, there are also things I just want to add. Sometimes you're talking about changing behaviors. I mean, even just using the Test from Former Smokers campaign, you know, we don't necessarily have video cameras, and we know every single person that's clicked our page, and if they say yes, they're ready to quit, we can't necessarily, you know, be in the, you know, watch them not smoke, but there are very strong indicators like that. And also in terms of the tracking, some of the social media tools often have them. For instance, Facebook and Twitter, you can see how many people have shared or liked or favorited. But you can definitely attach other things to them to see how many people are accomplishing objectives. So if you set certain objectives from the beginning, and there are certain questions that you can attach to your social media posts or your social media pages. I'm sorry?
They have to come back to the social media site to say that they've done it though.
Yeah, they would. There are also, what you can do is you can set URLs. Just one that I can think of is called Bitly. And it basically counts how many times someone has come to a page, how many unique people have come to their page. I mean, there are so many different tools out there. And that's probably why a lot of organizations now do have social media experts. Whereas all of us, you know, have kind of gotten to social media later in the game. But there are a lot of social media is become so important that it's become specialized. Yeah, there are certainly evaluation tools out there.
Okay. Sorry, I know you're going to
Amy, I'm very curious about the strategy behind the selection of the term public health nerd and what went into that process and how you landed on it.
So, great question. Believe it or not, we actually did a little survey to see what resonated. We asked people about the term geek versus nerd. Geek was looked at more of it as a technology term, whereas nerd was, you could be a nerd about anything. And nerd was really not offensive to people. You know, so when we were, and we really did have a lot of concern about this offending, you know, people, but we haven't seen that at all. And we did, I mean, it was like, I don't know if you know about federal government surveys, but we can do like, we have to get OMB approval in order to do large surveys. So we did small surveys with those two terms. And nerd was definitely preferred over geek. And, you know, we launched this during Geek Week. I don't know if I mentioned that, but it was a timely, you know, we wanted to be ready to launch during Geek Week because, you know, but we preferred and chose the term nerd based on our research. So, you know, I think, I don't know how everyone else feels here, but, you know, people call me nerd all the time. I just get, you know, like, nerdy about all kinds of things.
So the feedback you got though from it was positive?
From the research that we did?
The feedback from the youth, what the different companies that like this concept, they're,
look at the metrics. It's been huge. And you know, that last graphic I showed you on the vital signs, I mean, we're promoting a vital signs publication. That is a public health publication. That is not that exciting for most people. But that graphic, I'm thrilled about it because that's a publication that the Office of the Director publishes. So, you know, we use the NERD for promotion. We use the NERD graphic to promote the mobile app that we have for, what's it called? It's a, epidemiology app that we have. And we also promoted vital signs. The vital signs graphic was published during the same week when we were talking about Ebola. It was huge. This is when the two doctors were coming to the United States and enterovirus. It was the most engaging graphic for the whole week. And we had Ebola and EDV-68 going on. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is, like, what we do is very serious. But people need a way to engage with that lighter side of what we do, and in a way to, because as when we post something that we want people to share or to evangelize, you know, how many people share that depressing statistic about, you know, chronic disease affecting, you know, I mean, so it's just another tool in the box, and it's worked very well. I will say that not everybody was on board, you know, with this from the beginning, but once we had a couple in the bag that were very successful, and we saw, you know, partners like APHA, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, just really getting on board, it was, and you know, my director, you know, who's so conservative, Division of Public Affairs Director, was like, you know, her order to me was, go outside the box as much as you want to. So, you know, test it. See how it goes. You have to prove that something you really believe in works.
Can I just say, you guys did a zombie campaign a couple of years ago, and we stole that from you guys. So we localized it, and it was a hit. We did a pod training, and we were dressed as zombies, and we ran people through. We did the whole zombie thing, so, yeah.
I mean, and plagiarize. I mean, that's what we do. We want you to do that. That is so flattering for us, you know, to take our content and localize it. And that's what I was talking about while I mentioned content syndication. You know, we really, because, you know, the statistics, the, you know, customizing our content is something that, you know, if you don't have a lot of resources to create your own, we certainly want to help you do that. So.
Okay, Tim Gibbs from the Delaware Academy of Medicine and the Delaware Public Health Association. I came in half an hour late, so you may have covered this, but let's talk about using Twitter in particular for not disaster preparedness, but disaster response.
I think you would be a good person to speak about that.
We have been really looking at that, and fortunately, we haven't had any major disasters recently where in our jurisdiction. But we have been looking at how we would use social media in that. And we've looked at other jurisdictions. We've taken a look at most recently how with Ebola. New York and how their public health department is using social media. Boston during the bombings, that was another good example of how they use Twitter to get information out to folks and to really get the messaging out there. And I feel like that was very effective. And from what I've gotten into a few sessions where that was really a success story. They handled that really well. So we, haven't really had to go there yet, but we are looking at it, and we want to make sure that we expect to be on Twitter and all of our different social media platforms and getting that information out there as quickly as possible.
Just as a follow-up comment with the every year that goes by that we don't have the big one in California, the likelihood is that we will. So I hope that you all will start test-bedding responses, because we're limited in bandwidth because of mass infrastructure destruction. Twitter is a really great tool and way of communicating.
I will say that with Twitter, it is really important to create banks of content for things that you know are inevitably you know going to happen. We do that with all of our topics, whether it's gun violence, you know, all kinds of. We have banks of material that have been cleared, and then we can customize it for the moment. Because if you're trying to clear things after the fact, after it's happened, you will never be effective. So it's unfortunate that we have to work that way. It seems morbid in some ways, but it, that's the way to plan to use Twitter effectively.
So in Maryland, the governor that soon to be previous governor and our soon to be previous state health officer, director of health, our secretary of health, both do a lot of tweeting and have a good relationship with social media. And we just had a conference about that. And in Howard County, one of our counties, and I'm not going to do justice to the story, but in Howard County, there was a shooting in a mall. And the PIO for that county got the call really quickly, as she should. And the first thing she did, other than call somebody to say, I'm dropping the kids off, was to say, just heard about the shouting on Twitter. Just heard about the shooting. Public information officer and police on the way. And so she immediately took control of the problem and tweeted frequently, including times when she didn't have an update because she didn't want someone else, no offense journalists, the media, to fill the space that was empty. And as a result, they had really good media control of that situation, and they also did a very good job, we found it after the fact, of letting the people who had been locked down in the mall know what was going on, you know, when it was safe to come out, letting the family and friends of those people who were following them on Twitter, you know, when I tweeted to my mom, I'm okay, I'm locked down in X, not me personally, that helped. So that social media, where the PIO took control of the situation early on, made a real big difference. And you're right, she and her sheriff, because it was the sheriff's department in control of that situation, had set up beforehand an arrangement that you will talk, I will talk to you, and you will talk to the public for me, and it stayed that way. So it really worked out really well. At least from a public information and a social media standpoint.
Michael, so just in the same vein as that, so I've been given a couple of suggestions about, so I work at Toronto Public Health, so we're a very large health unit, and the whole notion of trying to be very timely, but also the risk of getting out the message. So I guess we've got a couple of tips now about, you know, try and prepare a bank of material in advance, try and keep on the message as much as you can, and put some things out there, but how do you deal with something where you don't have a bank? And there's going to be a lot you can say in a moment. What's your approval process? What do you do at CDC? How do you deal with that?
So it really depends on, like, at the director's level, we have a clearance process for every different type of piece of content, for fact sheets, but for social media, we have a special clearance process, a tight clearance process. Like, for example, with Ebola, I mean, I'm on the content team. We have to review every single thing that goes out. We create, we review. I think for things that whether it's not so timely, you can go through a full clearance, but there needs to be that arrangement in advance that these are the three people that are going to be looking at clearance. And I don't know whether you can say that there's no bank. I mean, you know your key messages. You know the resources that you have. So we always are able to grab, we know where the resources are, what is the latest version of that resource. And it's really important to know who can update that, you know, that piece, that infographic, you know, to fit that moment. And you know, you have to have that one person, the visual person to go to, the content person to go to, the science person to go to, and that's it. It's a tight clearance process, and everybody understands that. It cannot be like at CDC for our fact sheets that every single person weighs in on that. It just doesn't work.
I think we have time for one more question.
Question is a generous term, but I was saying a lot.
Okay.
When we were talking about disaster response, particularly because Facebook has already changed their algorithm of who's you're the CDC, I think everyone in this room follows the CDC on social media, you're going to be just fine. But if it's like a boil water advisory or something local, amplifying that signal to all the people that don't already follow the local health department is something your staff can really do, even if they're not on social media. They can retweet you and repost and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's really important, is especially if your a local health department is making sure that staff is on board, because there's certainly in social media strength in numbers.
You don't have to just post your content on your own profile. Mm-hmm. You can post your content on CDC's profile. So, make sure that you're aware of your partners for different occasions of where you can get your message out. Make them aware. Like, I'll drop Daniel an email and say, hey, this is coming out, can you help us out, So know who your partners are for your different topics, and give them a heads up. Changing their algorithm hurt us a lot. It didn't just hurt small, it hurt us a lot. And we don't do any paid media on the agency, CDC's main agency profile. I mean, that paid is done through programs where they have money, we don't have any money for that. So what we get, we earn, and all through your help, really. It hurts everybody, and you have to be aware of what they're doing and how to get around the... Like, for example, when everybody realized that they were getting more engagement with graphics, everybody started taking their text and putting them on a graphic. So guess what Facebook did? They said, your graphic has to... I don't know if you're aware of this, but, doing digital creative and doing promoted posts on Facebook, your graphic has to meet a 20% rule. So if your graphic is more than 20% text, it'll be blocked by Facebook. So they're really smart about getting you to pay for reach. So you got to be on top of it if you're going to be in the game. It's a game changer.
I think
you're always changing it.
I know. And as public health practitioners, we have to be where the changes happen. I want to thank everybody for coming to the session. It was really great, really good conversation. National Public Health Week 2015 theme. I don't know if anyone's heard about it, but April 6th through April 12th. Evie, can I go ahead and say the theme?
Yeah.
Okay. Healthiest Nation 2030. So we're going to have some contests. We're going to be doing some social media. Everyone in this room should participate, especially in our contests. Maybe you can come to Chicago next year and have your own presentation for your own starting lines to share, or your own public health nerd graphic that you can share from CDC or with CDC.
Maybe we'll have a contest. You guys can create, your own public health nerd content or what it means to you. And I mean, that would be. Would you be interested if we hosted the contest?
Contests are cool. If you win, they pay for your registration.
We've had health departments reach out to us and put our graphics on their t-shirts and run races, and we've had a lot of creative uses of the nerd. So if you think of something, a way that you want to use the public health nerd, please email me. Because, it's public domain. We ask you not to co-brand, but there's many different things that people have done that have just been super.
Yeah, thanks everybody for coming.